This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Wednesday afternoon, and great to have you with us for the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Rob Hart for Chris Kreidel. 48 degrees in Chicago under partly sunny skies, topping out at 52 today, unseasonably cool. The complete AccuWeather forecast is coming up.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park and also sponsored by GWC Law. Let's kick things off with an update from Bloomberg, sort of the exact opposite of yesterday. Here's Joan Doniger.
That's right, Cisco, the flip side. But it may be more than just earnings speaking on Wall Street today. The stock averages are down 3/4 to close to 1%, with the Dow falling 177 points, the NASDAQ 57, the S&P 20. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is lower by almost 1.3%. It's dragged by the 7% drop in Anixter shares. And while most strategists are blaming weaker-than-predicted earnings from companies such as Boeing, which missed profit targets for the quarter, chipmaker AMD, whose profit and revenue forecast disappointed, its shares falling some 12%, and Chipotle Mexican Grill, not enough spice in its profits either. That may not all be all that's sitting ill with investors. The chief market strategist at Jones Trading Institutional Services says investors are just now processing the retirement speech of Arizona Senator Jeff Flake, which criticized President Trump, though not by name, pretty strongly. Michael O'Rourke tells Bloomberg that puts the tax reform plan investors want to see up in the air, since Flake isn't the president's only Republican Senate critic. Back to you, Rob and Cisco.
Well, coming up in the program, we will talk about some of the new numbers released today. Home sales and durable goods surprise on the upside. And then we'll get the latest on the tax reform efforts in Washington. And then at 12:19, Amazon wants to put people inside your home. We'll explain what that's all about.
Personal Finance Wednesday, is an NBA still worth the cost and the time? And Chipotle trying to rebound, but still some struggles. RJ Hottovy will join us with some insight. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Reports on sales of new homes and orders from durable goods lead today's data, while the debate on tax reform continues on Capitol Hill. We're joined by Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist with Bloomberg, based in New York. Carl, welcome back to the program. Let's start with sales of new homes, which surprised on the upside by a rather considerable margin. Economists expecting a 0.9% decrease in the month of September. Instead, they get an 18.9% increase, and that's the best number in quite some time.
Yes, quite a dramatic whipsaw there, but we know that hurricanes significantly impacted a lot of economic data in the August and September period, and new home sales were impacted as well, to the extent that some housing stock may have even been destroyed. There was also the issue of power outages and whatnot, so contract signings and closings may have been disrupted as well. So we saw a swoon in August and then a dramatic pickup in September. And it wasn't necessarily just in the South, though. So this is, you know, once we try to peel away one layer of hurricane impact, we do see more broadly that housing activity looks encouraging in the U.S. economy now.
Now, could we also factor in a hurricane-influenced statistical correction for the rise in durable goods orders?
Well, I think that you know, we've seen a surprisingly fast rebound in a lot of economic indicators, and durable goods may very well be part of that. Given all of the widespread utility outages, I thought that there could be a longer lull, but I guess evidence of the robustness of the economy, we saw an array of industrial surveys and whatnot bounce back quite vigorously, and that was also reflected in the durable goods numbers as well.
Now, are we seeing, and maybe it's too early to tell, are we seeing this sort of these good numbers nationwide, or are there pockets? Is it regional in any way?
It doesn't look to be regional. Now, certainly if we really drill into the details of some of the housing and construction figures, we can see evidence of hurricane rebuilding, but it's happening on a broader basis after we account for that hurricane story. So we can't just chalk it up to storm-related anomalies. It looks like the economy is developing a bit more momentum as we head towards year end. Now, mind you, over the last 8 years, the economy has regularly logged GDP growth of about 2% per year. We seem to finally be accelerating towards my best estimate is 2.4% by year end. So that doesn't sound like a lot, but in a $17 trillion economy, it certainly does add up.
Let's talk about the wider economy, Carl, because we have some back and forth in Washington, and it looks like we may get tax reform, but it's a little tenuous. As an economist, what sort of tax reform would you like to see that would really benefit the economy?
Well, I think we would see a tremendous benefit from adopting a more efficient tax code. So there's so many loopholes and deductions and time spent on actuaries and accountants to file taxes that there could be a lot of benefit by having a more streamlined code. That being said, we have to be very thoughtful about how tax reform takes place, because if we're simply borrowing more or running up the budget deficit by giving a tax cut that's not paid for, essentially, you will get faster growth, but that's just a sugar high that will have to be paid for later on down the road. So we really have to look at the longer term implications of the tax code. Certainly, cutting the corporate tax could make the economy more competitive with a lot of our foreign peers. Also, the way we treat earnings and profits generated overseas is different in the U.S. relative to those other large industrial economies. And also, there's this notion of deductions for state and local and mortgage interest that are potentially on the chopping block, and I think that could have some real economic consequences. I'm a strong believer in the benefits of home ownership and a lot of intangible economic benefits that that come from having high ownership rates. So I would like to see that mortgage interest rate, mortgage interest deduction, stay in the tax code.
Thanks a lot, Carl Riccadonna, Chief U.S. Economist with Bloomberg. Coming up, Amazon wants to be able to enter your house even when you're not there.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The latest feature from Amazon will allow inside delivery of packages even when you're not home. Let's get all the details from Mark Gurman, consumer technology reporter, Bloomberg News, based in San Francisco. Mark, before we get the nuts and bolts, it almost seems like a sort of scary headline there. Amazon wants to let people in your house when you're not there.
Yeah, it is frightening. And, you know, I guess this is just the pace of technology. Companies looking for more and more ways to become of people's lives. But yes, having someone have a key to get into your home and actually drop off a package, it is a scary thought. I mean, there's some parts of the world where people might have no issue with this, but other parts of the world that people might say, hey, there's no way I'm going to take that risk. And it'll be interesting to see what the vetting process is for the delivery drivers that Amazon will be hiring for actually going into homes to deliver packages. It almost feels like Amazon is taking on a huge liability with this program.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the liability aspect of it. Tell us, nuts and bolts, how does Amazon want to do this? What's the new program?
So it's a mix of a number of things. So overhead, there's a service called Amazon Key, which is an in-home kit. It comes with that service. It has cloud storage as well as this camera that works with Alexa. It's a $120 camera. And what the camera does is sort of monitors your home. It works with a lock system that you put on your door. So when the person comes to drop off your package, it'll unlock the lock when they get there, let you drop off the package. And you'll get a notification to, you know, your smartphone or other Amazon device to watch the delivery happen. And they go in, drop it off, and then they leave, and the door will relock. And it's, you know, similar to other lock systems where you can send a key to other people. It's just in this case, you're giving the wireless key to someone dropping off a package, not a dog walker or a friend or family, something like that.
I don't, Rod. It's very easy to be snarky about this idea, but many applications that are common today were being mocked 10 or 15 years ago. So where is this technology in the year 2027, for example?
You know, that's a great point, and I feel the same way about it. I mean, there were many things like video conferencing even, or even digital door locks in their previous incarnation that people sort of criticized for maybe being too intrusive. So to 2027, your point there, I agree with that. I think this is going to become normal pretty soon. You know what? I give it less than 3 years for it to become a completely normalized type of thing.
And outside of letting people into your home to provide services, when will the digital key become commonplace just for the average home?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something we already see happening. Like every major smartphone platform and technology platform, ranging from Apple, Google, Amazon, Facebook, they're all working on smart home-related products and platforms in order to take over all the devices in your home. So I think that's something that's already happening, and I think this will help push stronger penetration of that concept.
Is the cloud cam one of the ways that Amazon's trying to maybe blunt some of those fears? Because, in theory, you'd be able to see what's going on in your home.
Exactly. So the concept is they know, the package is being delivered. You get a notification on your phone. You can watch it be delivered. The person coming in and leaving all at the same time with this kit.
One thing we can say, Mark, is regardless of whether it takes off or not, seems like every week Amazon has some new revolutionary idea, something that they're disrupting.
Yeah, it's been a really busy last 6 months for Amazon. It seems like, to your point, every few weeks they have a brand new product. They've been doing tablets. They had the Echo Show earlier this year. Bunch of new Echoes, a smaller Echo. I actually have one on my desk. It's quite nice. All sorts of stuff from Amazon lately, but this is the most groundbreaking thing in terms of new category that Amazon has done this year, I think.
Mark Gurman, consumer technology reporter at Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Thanks for the insight. Up next, the latest numbers from Wall Street and Bloomberg.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's get the latest in the markets now from Joan Doniger at Bloomberg.
Rob, it could be a mix of earnings and politics moving Wall Street back from recent records. Right now, the Dow is down 163 points, the NASDAQ 51, the S&P 18. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down 1.25%, led by Anixter shares, 7% loss. Now, strategists mostly blame disappointing earnings reports from the likes of Boeing, AMD, and Chipotle Mexican Grill. But one strategist tells Bloomberg investors are getting a chance today to process the Senate speech made by Arizona Senator Jeff Flake yesterday to announce he'd be retiring. In effect, that strategist says investors are seeing that through their tax-colored glasses, that the speech taken as a severe criticism of the president could make it harder to get the tax cut investors have wanted to see. Walgreens is apparently going to close about 600 drugstores as it firms up its $4 billion deal to buy almost 2,000 Rite Aid stores. Walgreens says most of the stores that will be closed will be Rite Aids. It's not saying right now which ones. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have mixed trade here. Chicago corn down 1 to up 2.5 at the moment. We're down a quarter on December, 350, 2.5. Beans have been up 8 unchanged. We're up 1.75 in March at 9.97 3/4. And wheat's been down 2 to up 5. We're down 2 at the moment at 4.36 in December. Mixed trade here at the noon hour. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Right now, the Dow down 167 points. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Rob Hart for Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are slumping today. We'll see what's worrying traders.
New security measures for flights to the U.S. take effect tomorrow.
Personal Finance Wednesday. Is an MBA still worth the money?
Shares of Chipotle Mexican Grill continue to slide. It's our story stock of the day.
Some Chicago public school parents, teachers, even a few aldermen call for the ouster of school's chief, Forrest Claypool.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 170 points. The S&P 500 is up down 19, and the NASDAQ is down 51.
Beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland, a little warmer than yesterday, with a high of 52 degrees. We're almost there. 48 O'Hare, 49 Midway, 48 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Tomorrow will mark the start of enhanced security for passengers flying to the U.S. Let's take a closer look with Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University, based here in Chicago. Joe, welcome back to the program. What is in store for passengers who are flying back to the U.S. from some distant locale?
Yeah, well, all airlines are saying this is a big pill to swallow, but it is kind of a good news, bad news story. The good news is, the federal government's unveiling a new plan where really people with laptops and sort of larger in-cabin electronics will have to undergo perhaps some interviews, some increased security at airports, 180 airports around the world where flights come directly to the United States. And that could mean, we don't know yet, but it could mean that those passengers would have to arrive up to 90 minutes early for a flight. And we're getting some pushback from that, from foreign governments, foreign airlines, because it's a lot to do all at once. But the good news is this puts aside for the moment the questions of a flat-out laptop ban.
Which would be the thing that had been discussed before.
Let's find out about today's market activity. Paul Nolte is also with us. He's portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Paul, kind of the exact opposite of yesterday. Is this profit-taking, worries, earnings? What's going on here?
A little bit of all of them, actually. When you take a look at the investors and looking at the markets, there weren't a lot of worries about who the Fed chief was going to be. Earnings were going to be good. The economy's doing well. And taxes were going to be, we were going to get some tax legislation. Now all of that has gotten clouded over here. Earnings were a little bit soft in a couple bigger companies, Chipotle, which you mentioned earlier. Taxes are still, we don't know exactly how that's all going to look like. And actually, surprisingly enough, it looks like Janet Yellen might be one of the top two picks for the Fed chief.
And let's talk about earnings in general. Your thoughts, I mean, I know we still have some more coming out, but in general, your thoughts on this earnings season?
You know, the earnings themselves are not all that bad overall. Obviously, we've got certain companies that haven't done all that well, and that's really the story behind today's decline. But when you take a look at top line, overall revenue growth outside of the technology sector, revenue growth has been pretty flat to up a little bit. So a lot of the improvement continues to come from cost cutting, expense control, buying back stocks. So when you look at the overall revenue, those are up a few percentage points, but it's really the bottom line that continues to do well as companies continue to streamline business.
As Washington, as President Trump, had lunch yesterday with Republican senators trying to get his tax reform and tax cut plans off the ground, it's very easy to get lost in the weeds of all of the interpersonal issues that may be taking place in Washington at this present time. How can we, as investors, how should we watch and how should we evaluate news that is coming out of these tax reform negotiations?
You know, from an investor's perspective, to be perfectly honest, you really don't want to have the tax law or tax changes drive your overall portfolio. So you want to invest in the good companies and quality parts of the market, internationally, et cetera. And whatever falls out from the decisions in Washington are going to happen. We probably won't have them retroactive for 2017. It will probably be implemented starting 2018. So at that point, you can sit down and kind of chart your path, as it were, for what you might want to adjust going forward. But I don't think from an investor perspective it's going to change the landscape too terribly much. It may provide a little bit of a boost to earnings on the S&P 500, but overall not a huge change.
Let's take a look at what's happening with Chicago-based Boeing, and that is their earnings and sales beat analysts' expectations, but the stock is trading lower today. What's going on with that?
Yeah, there was. They came in a little bit below expectations as far as what they thought they were going to earn for the year. So their forward guidance was a little bit light. They had some problems with their tanker jet as far as deliveries go, and surprisingly enough, their backlog of orders actually came down. So they've been delivering on a lot of the jets and so on that they've promised. There's not a lot in the pipeline. So that gives investors concern. Then the last part is they have been the best performing stock in the Dow Jones by far this year. They're up over 60% for the year. So I think there's a little bit of profit taking here as well. It's not anything I think that we really have to worry about, but the fact that it's gone up so much this year, I think investors taking some money off the table.
Great insight as always. Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Thank you, Paul. Up ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday. Is an MBA still worth the time and money?
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Today we are focusing on the MBA and its real value. Is it still worth the time and the money? Joining us to talk about it, Mark Horner, wealth advisor, Fairhaven Wealth Management, editor of MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com, based in Oak Brook. Mark, MBAs can certainly cost a lot of money, and you may even have to leave the workforce for a while in order to get one. Are they still worth it if you want to have success in business?
So, Cisco, that's all true. I do feel compelled to go ahead and disclose my personal perspective in that my dad's been a longtime college president for almost 30 years. He's got an MBA and a PhD. My mom's got a master's degree and a PhD. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit of the black sheep in the family. I went to business school in my mid-20s and ended up dropping out to start a business. So I'm a business school dropout. So I just want to disclose that from my perspective.
Well, hey, Mark, the big question is, did you invest the money instead of spending it on tuition?
So, I learned a lot with starting that business in the mid-20s. I'd probably say a little bit more than I learned in the classroom. But I'd also say that I went back. I did go back to school to finish more focused certificates, not degrees in investment management and financial planning. So what I do for a living now, and that's actually an increasing trend around MBAs. There's been more and more students electing to focus on more specific areas of study, so master's degrees in finance or in accounting, rather than the broad-based MBA. So that's definitely a trend, which I think has a little bit to do with the rise in tuition. I think that could be some birds coming home to roost for universities with tuition rates just getting really out of control.
And leading some schools, University of Wisconsin is just the latest, but to rethink the way they deliver the MBA and whether or not they'll even continue to offer it.
That's absolutely right. And I think that's an element, though, of the schools reacting to what they see in trends in the marketplace. And so I think that's a good thing to always reevaluate just what you're offering is. And this is not to say that an MBA is either a good or a bad thing. I think there are certain industries where that degree is almost a requirement. So management consulting, investment banking, certainly in higher education, advanced degrees are a requirement. But there's plenty of opportunities in the business world that don't require that kind of investment.
Would this require some readjustment on the part of some corporate HR departments, which are almost trained to look for the letters MBA when they scan resumes and cover letters?
Yeah, Rob. So I think it does vary industry by industry. I think that what you describe is true in those industries I mentioned. Sometimes that MBA designation can be a negative for maybe smaller startup companies, perhaps that are not interested in paying the prices that they might have to pay to MBAs. They might rather have somebody that's got specific experience around technology. So again, I think it really varies. What I do believe, though, is true for anybody in their ultimate success in their profession. It's going to have a lot less to do with whatever diplomas hang on your wall, and far more to do with what a person actually executes with the education that they might have.
Thanks a lot, Mark Horner, wealth advisor, Fairhaven Wealth Management, and editor of the MillionDollarCupOfCoffee.com, based in Oak Brook. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, recovery remains elusive for Chipotle Mexican Grill.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's been a rough go for Chipotle Mexican Grill, and it's reflected in the company's stock price. We're joined by RJ Hotteby, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar, based in Chicago. RJ, welcome back to the program. Chipotle shares falling more than 13% today because of disappointing third quarter results. What's happening at Chipotle these days?
Yeah, I think it's a continuation of a lot of the issues we've seen, you know, dating back to the food safety scares the company had in 2015. We've seen a few more other food safety concerns pop up since then. But I think the bigger issue at hand is that the experience at the locations has fallen by the wayside. You know, it used to be you knew you got a quick meal, you know, quick throughput at the restaurants. And I think between turnover at the employee level, you know, other training, maybe too focused on the food safety side, and just a lack of innovation, as well as a relevant digital platform, has made it a less relevant place in today's restaurant marketplace.
Let's talk about that restaurant marketplace. Is it simply just too crowded now for places like Chipotle and the market to which it's trying to appeal?
I've certainly seen a lot of competitors try to replicate what made them so special, the idea of combining higher quality ingredients and a you know, high turnover type place, like you typically see at a quick service restaurant, but prices that you are closer to what you see at a casual dining restaurant. This whole idea of a fast casual category, they really pioneered that. Now we're starting to see a lot of other players start to come into this market. Yeah, I think that probably makes them, it makes it very difficult for them to get back to the peak fundamentals, both sales and margins that they once did. You know, however, I do think there's still some opportunities. I still think that it has a lot of advantages that it brings to the table that maybe have been overlooked.
Habits change really fast, RJ. Is there a chance that when they went through their big problems, especially with the health issues in some of their restaurants, could it be that habits just changed and people aren't thinking about Chipotle anymore?
Yeah, I think that's a real, there's a real possibility of that. I think if you look at it, I think you basically have to look at Chipotle's customers in two groups now. There's a group that, you know, is willing to look past the food safety issues and are going to be pretty loyal. I still think that the company can do a better job catering to them. But I do think that there's a certain audience that is not coming back to Chipotle, that they're never going to regain, no matter how hard they try. And these are the groups that are going to try other concepts and try some of the new competitors out there. But even with that, even if you're catering to a smaller audience than you once did, I think that they can still make this work.
And any recommendation on the stock?
We think that share is about 20% undervalued right now. Obviously, there's a lot of negativity priced in the stock right now. It's still probably not for the risk averse, but it's one that, you know, if they can start to string together a couple of interesting quarters of sales, might start to get interesting in 2018.
Thanks a lot, RJ Hotteby, consumer equity strategist based at Morningstar in Chicago.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. We're wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street, sponsored by Lake Forest Sports Cars, the Ferrari specialists at Bloomberg. Here's Joan Doniger.
Cisco, we've been seeing the biggest drop in the S&P in more than 2 months, although investors now are clawing back some of the worst of the losses. They're down 0.5 to 0.75%, with the Dow falling 118 points, the NASDAQ 40, the S&P 14. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down about 1%, led by Anixter shares. And while most of the blame goes to uneven earnings reports, some of it now is now targeting politics, with a strategist telling Bloomberg investors are taking a look at Senator Jeff Flake's retirement speech to the Senate and wondering about its effects on the tax cut that they are hoping to see. The strategist says the president really will have to negotiate now. Dr. Pepper Snapple snapped up Bai Brands in January for nearly $2 billion, but the upstart beverage business may have Dr. Pepper reaching for the medicine cabinet. Bai Brands has contributed to two straight quarters of disappointing results at Dr. Pepper. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.